Accession number 27769.
Lady Clark, Reel 1. Can you tell me when you were born, please, and where you were born?
Yes, I was born on the 14th of July, la 14 juillet, 1924. I was born in Swansea, South Wales.
And can you tell me a little bit about your family?
Yes, my late father owned a coal mine in the Swansea Valley, where I was brought up, and my mother died when I was born, so I never knew her, but my sister and I were brought up by our grandmother.
Now, your father had been something of a sportsman.
Yes, he had great claim to fame. He played for Wales and captained Swansea in rugby, not the other ball game.
And in the First World War?
Yes, he was a lieutenant in the First World War. He survived the Somme twice, came back, but would never talk about it. It was always a living nightmare. So we never really knew much about it.
Now, you were brought up in Wales.
Well, I went, first part of my education, I went to a convent in Swansea, and then at the tender age of 12, I was sent to Cheltenham Ladies' College to have a sound education. Yes, and from there I took entrance to Oxford, but instead, it's all very strange. There was a girl in Cheltenham who was going up to join the Fannies. I had never heard of them, but it meant a day in London, and I can't think how I was allowed to go with her. And to my amazement, I left Baker Street with her, having joined the Fannies. I then had to telephone my father to say I wasn't going up to Oxford. I joined a thing called the Fannies, which he knew little, as little as I did about them.
What was his response to that?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't wish to remember. No, I can't.
Now, how was the when you went to the Fannies, was there any initial training?
Yes. We were about 30 of us congregated at Paddington Station to go to Henley-on-Thames. We were in our own clothes at the time, and we were labelled. It was all supposed to be very secretive. We went to Henley and to the camp there run by the Royal Corps Signals, where we trained for 6 months, doing Morse code every day. And then went to Scotland, to Dunbar, for a few months. And then I was very lucky not to be stuck in England. I went overseas almost immediately with a friend of mine, and we went to North Africa for a short time, and then on to Monopoly, to Number One Special Force.
Now, before you left for North Africa, how did you find, when you were at Henley, how did you find the coding and the other skills?
Well, it was quite hard work, really, doing Morse code all day and every day. I don't know. Somehow I got through it.
And the other girls as well? Did everyone?
Yes, we were just doing that. Just doing that.
Did everyone take to the coding? Was everybody's skill up at saying?
No, I can't remember. I really can't remember. So worried to get on with it myself.
How did you come to move to North Africa? Were you aware of
something? Well, yes, I don't know. This selection came, and instead of going to, there were awful stations in England, Poundon and Grendon were the worst outside Oxford. This friend who joined up with me, and we were together the whole war, suddenly we were told we were going to North Africa, which was very exciting. We went on the Empress of Bermuda, and what I can remember, it was torpedoed en route. I can remember it's Heinz tomato ketchup, which was available on board, which we hadn't seen in England for a while.
And it was torpedoed?
Yes, outside Algiers. The convoy was.
Was the ship on?
No, we were all right. Yes.
And you put into Algiers?
Yes.
Now, what was the SOE set up, to your knowledge, in North Africa?
In North Africa? You know, I can't remember much about it because I wasn't there very long. It was outside Algiers, in a remote place in the sand, sand dunes, and I don't remember. I can't think who we worked to or what hours. I don't recall it.
Do you recall any of the girls you were with?
Well, except this girl I went out with, and she and I went on to Monopoly.
Yes, was that quite soon after you'd arrived?
Yes, about 2 months after. I think they had a surplus of fannies, so they moved the new recruits on to Italy, which was a blessing.
How did you get there? What was the journey?
We went by boat, and we landed in Brindisi. I remember that bit. And then we had this very old house in Monopoly, run by Italian women who had never seen anyone in uniform. It was quite crude, you know. We slept about, I think, 10 in one of the rooms. The heating was a pan with coals. And we went to the signal office, which was run by Scott Job. And, of course, there were shifts, as you can imagine. 8 till 12, 12 till 6, 6 till midnight, and all night.
What would happen on a typical shift?
Oh, you would go, and there were about 10 sets. And you had to listen to every one, even though it hadn't been heard of for months. You sat there listening for the code sign, if it turned up. The one dread was to get London, because it meant about 30 messages, and you were up all night writing them down. And it was on one of these occasions when he was missing, Sir Robert was missing, but I told you in plain language on this particular set, it was called Coilum South, came in plain English, Bob sends love to Marjorie, and I knew where he was.
And that was very unusual.
Plain language was totally... Anyway, it was mostly Italians who were transmitting to you. And we did meet the young Italian partisans, some of them, so that you would recognise their transmission. You could tell if it wasn't them, but if it was a German or something transmitting, you would know the difference.
Were there any instances of that?
No, I don't know.
Did you hear, or were you aware that that could be a possibility?
Not really. I know it was really quite difficult hearing these chaps in the field because the noises that, you know, the Germans used to drone in, and you told the poor chap you could hear him, and then by the time he got on with his transmitting, you couldn't hear a thing, so he had to come back again, which was dangerous.
What was this interference? What was
It was the Germans. Yeah.
Doing a kind of a blocking.
Yes, tactic. Yes. And then when we moved up, my great claim to fame, Nancy, my great friend who never left my side, we entered Rome in 1944, in June, when it was liberated. The Americans liberated it, of course, and I just remember that.
Back to when you were in Monopoly, that time there. What were the living conditions and the food that you had?
Well, pretty crude, basic army. I think I told you the sausages would be mixed in with the porridge and that sort of thing. And if you went out to a meal, which was very rare, you waited them to catch the chicken before they plucked it or cooked it. So it was quite a long time a coming. Oh, I can't remember basically what meals, but it would have been army rations.
And how were the local Italians? How did they treat you?
Oh, well, you hardly had contact with them. No, we didn't speak a word of Italian at that time. And they couldn't believe whence we had come from. They'd never seen anything like it.
Was that part of the... Italy, how affected was that by the war? Had there been any fighting?
No, none at all. And they were they were very poor down there. They had no shoes and they were all in black. Very poor part. And of course the electricity, rather like Baghdad today, the lights went out for no reason at all. You could be on a lighter moment, be having your hair done, and that there'd be no power. It suddenly went. Those are the funny moments, but...
Was there, what sort of social life was there outside of the office hours? Was there anywhere?
No, only with the chaps who were in SOE with you, you know, the ones at number one special force.
Were these officers who were on the headquarters staff or on operations as well?
No, a bit of both, because I met my sailor quite early on, and he would come back with his little boat and we said, not really any Italians you went out with, no, you never met them. I don't think you would have been encouraged.
Where could you go? Was there Bari or Brindisi? Were
they well, you said you didn't travel. You didn't travel. You didn't have the transport. No, you just stayed in around Monopoly.
Can you remember any of the other girls that you were with working in the coding?
Yes, I can. Pam Faith was one, and my friend Nancy, and his naval secretary. Yes, there weren't so many of us, which was rather nice.
And there were, you were on the coding side?
I changed to coding towards the latter part. I gave up, you know, I really found it was too much, and became a coder. So when we eventually moved up to Siena, we were based there, I was a coder. And that was better because you at least you had some information.
Yes, but of course in your previous job you couldn't...
No. Nothing, just odd letters, which meant nothing.
And you recall some of the messages that side from the coding?
When you were well, again, they didn't really mean very much. Troop movements or whatever, you know, it was all coded for the coders to.
Was it always in English?
The coding, yes.
Yes, I remember being asked, just thinking of it, when I was in up in the Bud's End, I got a message saying, please inform us of the state of the mulberry bush crops this year. We hear they've been damaged. You know, it was for silk. I remember thinking, and they said mulberry, repeat mulberry, so they meant it.
Who was sending you that?
What the mulberry bush was doing, and they grow around there.
Who was sending you that?
Somebody.
Because I recall when I knew where you were, Colham South, I never heard any more from you after that. Did I? The operator must have disappeared. What happened to him?
Well, himself and just the...
Yes, I know, but when I knew where you were, which part you were, there weren't frequent messages after that.
No.
I never.
I suddenly got this message about mulberry bushes.
Oh, I don't know.
Strong.
I would say it was the strangest organization, wasn't it? You never got paid. There was no promotion. If you were a wireless operator or a coder, you always were cadet ensign. Secretaries had one or two pips, didn't they? Were paid more, and we used to get really upset about that. But we all remained cadet ensigns. And explain to anyone you're in the family as well. Strange. But I came home, Easter 45, from Naples. That I do remember. Yes. With a friend whose fiancé had been blown up, Nancy de Fontblanc. And she, Mary de Fontblanc, and she was carrying her fiancé's berry. He was in the Royal Marine Commandos. I'll never forget that.
And you came, did you go straight home?
Well, I got to London. My father met me. And then I went to meet your mother and father, who at least I had vaguely written to them and said not to give up all hope. And I met, Nancy came with me, my friend, and we met your father at St. John's Wood underground, still carrying his naval bed. He told me never to lose that camp bed. I've still got it. And your father took us a home, met your mother, and we were paragons of virtue. We didn't smoke and we didn't drink. And then I went home. And I was called back to go to Poundon or Grendon, I can't remember, and I thought that was ridiculous because the war was over. And who were they transmitting to? But on the big farewell day where I was suspended, I had to pay for everything I had lost. My greatcoat, everything, all the messing cans we'd ever had, you paid for them.
And when did you, when were you able to confirm that your husband had survived? Or your husband
had a telegram at Poundon or Grendon. Where was I? Arrived back from Germany Saturday night. Meet you, London, so-and-so. So.
I think it was V-Day, wasn't it?
No. Were you in London for V-Day? I can't remember.
V-Day.
Well, VJ-Day before you went out. Oh, dear. No. Never regret it. I'm so glad I didn't go up to Oxford, write all those awful essays about things. Can you imagine? Humility and God knows what. Let the grandchildren go instead. It was an eye-opener, and after Cheltenham, I felt you could survive anything. Believe you me.
Had that given you various skills? Had it been a test, Cheltenham?
Cheltenham was a place where there was no failure. You never failed an exam. You were not allowed to fail. And it certainly brought out in you anything you might have got beforehand. I could play cricket with a hard ball because I had so many boy cousins, so I could catch this. Those dear ladies, we used to get out at 6 a.m. and have this ball hit at you in the summer. Those other nice ladies, you know, had never seen a cricket ball. So I loved the sport there, and yes. I had a group of Cheltenham girls here the other day, and we all agreed. It was tough going, but we were very glad we'd been. And I think that's what you'd say about Cheltenham.
It was a terribly conservative place. They're living in the Ark, weren't you?
Oh!
I mean, fantastic. The girls of Cheltenham and the boys of Cheltenham walked down separate sides of the street.
We went different parts of the town, not the street.
And you didn't carry your books to work. You had
a horse and trap. Horse and trap picked your sacks, they were called, in the morning. By golly, it was tough. I had a sister there who I never met because I'd spoken in assembly or done something. Well,
it's extraordinary.
Yeah, I never, never.
Why was that?
Because I'd spoken and hadn't spoken, or I'd done something I shouldn't have done, but I never saw her. Never saw her. But it was strange. I always remember my sister had a boyfriend, which was older than I was, and this Air Force chap was stationed at Cheltenham, and he came to one of the houses to ask if he could take me out to tea. Forget it. So he came to tea, and I think we had about 6 escorts watching. Oh. But we went the other, last year we went to Cheltenham Boys College with those, that charity, the charity you support. Yes. And we went to the Boys' College, and I was interested because I'd never been inside the Boys' College. And in the audience was a group of Cheltenham Ladies' College, about 10 of them, and at the end of the evening, there was a staff member, and I said jokingly, "Are you escorting them home?" And she was. And it wasn't very far, was it? Oh, my lordy. And there you are. Brought you up to stand on your own feet.
Were you, when you were at Cheltenham, before, in the first 2 years of the war,
yes.
Were you very aware of the war?
Oh, yes, very tough. In fact, believe it or not, school buildings were commandeered by the Foreign Office. And Miss Popham, who was the headmistress, had to find accommodation for 900 girls. And 100 of us were sent out to a house called Cowley Manor, the Heber Percy house, where we lived and worked, all the school certificate ones, 100 en masse. And that's where we were for a year. The buildings were taken over. But night after night, I tell my children who don't remember, you never slept in your bed. You brought your suitcase, you know, your pajamas downstairs. And no, so Cheltenham was bombed. It was an extraordinary thing, wasn't it?
Well, they put in a lot of service people there. I think Cheltenham's always been a military town, hasn't it?
A lot of Americans there. But I also joined the fire brigade because the only way you could meet the boys' college. So about six girls and six boys ran up and down. What's that famous street where the Queen's Hotel? What do they call it? The Promenade? Yes, isn't it? Mm. With hoses, you know. That was tremendous excitement.
Were you ever there when Cheltenham was bombed?
Well, they said it was. I don't remember any bombs on Cheltenham. I know that she lost all the buildings. You know, they were commandeered. No. Since Swansea when there was bombed. Swansea was bombed very badly. Had four nights.
The very centre.
Pardon?
The very centre of Swansea.
Oh, and on the sea then, they hadn't got water. Do you remember? Four nights of bombing. No. So I survived Cheltenham. Survived is the word. But I always found, of all the boring and not so boring dinners I had to endure for years and years and years, there was always somebody, the man on your right or left, who had an aunt or a mother or a sister who had been to Cheltenham, or had heard about the Fannies. So, you know, you only had to sit back and say, I was in the Fannies and they were away, or his mother's mother was in Cheltenham. Oh, it's changed now. The houses have changed, haven't they? The pictures of them, I hardly know it. Still, good education.
Did you ever meet anybody else in the Fannies who'd been to Cheltenham?
No. No, I didn't.
Did the girls tend to have similar backgrounds?
No, not really. There were terribly grand ones, but there was a slight Welsh contingent. And again, I remember Cheltenham making friends with a delightful girl whose parents owned a bank in Hipperholme in Yorkshire. And they'd spent all their money sending her to Cheltenham. And she and I had a lot in common, because the other ones in the holidays would go to balls and things. We never heard of balls or coming out, whatever. So she and I used to go to the cinema as often as we could locally. So we discussed cinemas we'd seen, and all these grand ladies discussed their coming out balls or whatever they went to. Ah, dear, dear. But they were, I tell you what, my convent in Swansea was a wonderful education. I went to Cheltenham and took the exam, and I got 99% in the maths. They were very good at maths. And I was told you could have done better. And that was Cheltenham. Wasn't it? Dear.
It was a very good education. I mean, a scholastic education.
Oh. Whatever you'd got, they found it. Be it sport or whatever. But you certainly didn't fail. I've recorded all that.